Hey, DC fans, it's Gary from Burton's Comics. I just want to let you know that Burton's Comics is open and ready to serve you in Hamilton, Ontario, down 725 Barton Street East. Come in for some deals on the weekend. Thanks.
Beware the Creature features, who's talking all the time, reviewing animated and live action while having weed, rum, and wine. They podcast from the streets. They speak sometimes from their ass. Like, share, and subscribe, and take a bong hit to the head. My name is Clowny J, and I am joined, of course, by The Mize. How you doing, sir?
Doing pretty swell. You know, the usual flipper doodle kicking around about sort of thing. Wait, no, the state of the health environment, and just overall chillaxing, making the most productive use of my time. How about yourself?
The same, you know, life has been as usual. We did get into the city recently, so I have a couple of things to talk about during What Are We Reading, as well as the Collectibles Corner. Ooh. So let's just jump into the show as it is today.
Absolutely. And the show, again, we're reviewing today is Batman versus Robin, a tale that stretches out from the first introduction of Damian Wayne all the way through the introduction and story progression of the Court of Owls in the Batman series as well. But they managed to accumulate this into an animated feature that well progresses on the relationship between Bruce and Damian, and also proceeds to introduce us to a new monumental for the greater good sort of evil in the Court of Owls themselves, who are amongst the elite of Gotham's families, past, present, and of course, going in the future.
Now, this is the first animated film that doesn't directly take its influence from one particular comic arc, as this has a lot of things between like Batman and Robin, where Batman and Damian's very tumultuous early day relationship. Of course, it's got Scott Snyder's Batman New 52 run with the Court of Owls, as well as some people may agree with this, some people may not, but there's actually, I find, a little bit of a Nightfall influence on how Talon is written throughout this. He seems very Jean-Paul Valley and very Azrael to me.
He does have that sort of resemblance to him, which is just an excellent cut of character, especially in the modern era, introducing a new style and a new form of Batman like antagonist. And of course, referring back to Scott Snyder, the last week's episode in The Throne of Atlantis, I, for the life of me, for some reason, seem to have forgotten the name of Greg Capullo's partner in the everlasting decade-long Batman run. It was Scott Snyder, and I feel absolutely ridiculous for even forgetting the name directly after I had spoken it. Like, I don't know why I was so fixated on the name Zack Snyder. Maybe it was the announcement of his whole, like, Snyder cut thing going on. Or if I was just having one of those usual moments where maybe I rolled one fat bud too many. But of course, I don't want to blame the devil's lettuce on this. No need to go Justice League Dark on it and turn it into a magical fiasco. So I apologize if I had made any of you irate in my stupidity. But Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, a legendary comic book publishing duo amongst the recent modern age releases, both character creation, inclusion, just overall storytelling has been nothing short of genius.
Now, we'll actually use it as a nice transition because you brought up Scott Snyder as well. Did you see the 30-second teaser for the Justice League recut?
I am stoked, to say the least. I haven't seen it yet. I saw it go online, but I thought, you know what? No, we're gonna go and do this. I'm gonna take to that. If any of you guys have seen it and you want to express your excitement, your pessimism in regards to what we've been given so far, feel free to let us know. Of course, we'll let you know a little later on the show where you can find us. You know, you can message us, you can tweet us, you can show us a picture of your cat, whatever the case is. You know, you find some of these social media outlets, let us know what you think. Let us know if you have any just overall unique DC opinions as well. You know, we'd like to cover that just as well as we're covering the animated feature.
Now, I did see the 30-second HBO teaser.
Late, I'll be sweet, Daddy. What do you got?
Okay, so it starts off like, okay, let me put it on record. I have been against of giving Snyder a recut of this film. If you go back through Scott Snyder, if you go back through Zack Snyder's entire filmography, he's not that fucking, he's not fucking good at all. He has no sense of source material. He has no sense of storytelling. He is Michael Bay with a bigger budget.
So if you're sitting in my position in regards to opinionation about Snyder's releases, what would be that one story arc that you would say would give him any sort of credit towards being a part of the DC cinematic universe?
I mean, he fucked up the end of Watchmen.
He did, but creative control.
He didn't get Superman's character at all, not to mention completely mishandling Jonathan Kent.
I was a little on edge about Jonathan Kent as well. I won't lie about that. I was impressed with a personal creative twist that he took with him. But in regards to character similarity, I was just a little like, that's not the all-American Jonathan Kent that we know about. That's not the symbolism of an old-fashioned, hands-dirty, hardworking American that we would expect from Jonathan Kent. It had a little bit of a dark twist to it, and I didn't feel that was a character that needed a Watchmen treatment.
And from there, there was the complete mishandling of Batman versus Superman.
I will give Affleck props for doing the character as much justice, no pun intended, as he possibly could. Both the acting towards being a Bruce Wayne as well as a Batman was just, in my opinion, great. It was a great performance. But in regards to character development, as far as Snyder's concerned, I do agree with you. That was both hasty and very, very, very Frank Miller-ish.
And then, of course, there's Justice League, which we can only blame him half for. Of course, Joss Whedon does have to take the heat on that one as well.
If he didn't try and copy the MCU thing and try to use Steppenwolf as a Loki, then I would have been a little more on board. The Superman resurrection thing was phenomenal. You could have even used the Eradicator as a better villain source over Steppenwolf at this point. I wouldn't have personally. I gather that any of the creative control wouldn't have either. But why would you jump into the home of the head hoss and not, you know, have Dad come to the door?
So getting all that on record, this trailer starts off with Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman in an ancient cave. It looks like something that you would see like Carter Hall digging through, which makes sense for what they've set up for Wonder Woman. You know, she's a curator and that kind of thing. And she's got a torch. Absolutely. And she's got a torch in hand and she's looking at some ancient writings and ruins on the wall, and she brushes it off. And it's an inscription of Darkseid himself.
Did they happen to reveal or at least tease any familiarity as what the dialect actually was?
I couldn't tell what it was. It looked like it was just an inscription. It could have been even hieroglyphic. There is word that Martian Manhunter will be in this film as well, so it could have been Martian.
Martians inhabiting Earth, leaving hieroglyphs. I mean, even in Egypt, there have been the theories and the conspiracies regarding alien presence. So I would not mind seeing that exact twist. Like, not that I would question why there would be Darkseid hieroglyphs on a planet that's never seen them before, but including Martians really stretches out the cosmic variety and helps us understand better that the Martians have heard fable of Darkseid, Tanagarians have heard fable of Darkseid. You know, Greg from Planet Oochnock, like right next door, he's like, oh yeah, bad neighbor, never trims his hedges. Like, everybody in the known universe that's explored the cosmos by any means would be able to know who Darkseid is. And that's an acceptable way to introduce him in an extended cut.
Well, also remember, in the original cut, there is that scene where Steppenwolf is trying to invade Earth, and he's fought off by, like, the wizard Shazam. He's fought off by a couple of Green Lanterns, Amazonians, all that giant team-up scene. So they did try to invade Earth once before.
So as long as they follow the prophetic means to, if you throw giant lesbians, cosmic police officers, and aliens at him, he'll eventually go away. Kind of like the Jurassic Park thing, where it's like, you know, if you just stand perfectly still, then it'll just ignore you.
Man, I actually watched Jurassic Park again the other day. I fucking love that movie. I watch it like two or three times a year still.
Like, how could you not? Like, what is not cool about dinosaurs?
But speaking of DC Comics and things that are really cool, did you hear about their new deal with Spotify that they launched? They announced this yesterday, I believe.
With Spotify, that's pretty cool. What do they got going?
So remember back in the 19, well, we wouldn't remember, but we've heard of back in the 1940s and things like that. They had the radio serialized comic adventures of, and that's how characters like Jimmy Olsen were created and things of that nature. They're doing in podcast form in the future with voice actors.
What?
Yeah, I don't know who they're bringing in. I don't want to speculate at this time. I can only hope. But they're bringing people in to do radio comics as podcasts.
I can picture it now, man. Kevin Conroy or Phil Lamar will come in and then they'll sit down and they'll read fan letters as Batman, Green Lantern, those characters, but in like Casey Kasem fashion. Like, it doesn't have to have the whole, like, just, you know, emotional hippie twist to it, but it could just be these characters, you know, using the same form of like wording, sentencing put together. That Casey normally would. That it just has me really excited to see where they would go for it. Would Mark Hamill have like a 2-minute segment on the radio telling knock knock jokes to the Joker? It's just limitless the amount of ideas.
And speaking of those voices and ideas, I'll use that as a transition to what are you reading this week, sir?
That is a great question. Because I found myself putting my face in my palms. I have like that, oh my God, what is wrong with me kind of thing going on. So as I made mention of, I started up Red Hood's new Outlaw series. I also picked up a Justice League Dark book and, a couple of Flash things. The last project, Last Night on Earth with Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder. That was just phenomenal. This week coming around, I picked up future volumes that I would be missing after the ones I recently picked up in The Flash. So there's one involving the Trickster and of course, just jumping into this whole new universe setting as well. This is going to be an exciting read also as well. I picked up volume 5 of Justice League. It's finally the Justice Doom War that they've been leading up to this whole time. They've given hints and pokes at different parts of the multiverse, both the regular multiverse and the dark one, like what of these characters have and will be involved in the whole Doom and Justice conflict. So they've made mention on the magic side, things tied more closely to the dark multiverse than we thought. And with the Justice League going into this, they just pretty much learn all around that there are all these different multiverses or three different creators of multiverses set things up so weirdly. So not only is there like a multiverse, there's like, you know, you got your accountant multiverse, you got your marketing multiverse, and then you got your, you know, inbound call multiverse. And it just kind of branches off in a complicated fashion, but it, so you get introduced to such characters that were meant to pass before they happen to, I guess, bestow their power onto other characters to utilize. Like in Dark.
So as you heard there, Mai sounded like a Transformer having a good time in the bathroom by himself, and then the call dropped on us. But fear not, we will get right back into the call and right back with what we're reading this week. Hey, don't know what happened there, but as I told the listeners, you sound like a Transformer having a good time in the bathroom before the call dropped on us.
You know, ever since their war actually ended, Soundwave kind of hit rock bottom. And you know what? That's where the best prices were for me. But I'm sorry, I didn't actually happen to catch where we cut off there. I wasn't even looking down to see. I was just so mesmerized in what I was going on about regarding all these different multiverses.
Yeah, you had just talked about the three different branches sounding like a call center there.
Okay, so yeah, that wasn't far off then at all. So essentially, that's how they work there. There were a big name involvement in regards to the inclusion of these various branches of multiverses and the ultimate evil that connects them. So they're looking to stop that, but the Legion of Doom have harnessed this power. So this isn't the most powerful essence in the universe. This isn't just something overwhelming that they can overcome after a couple of issues. This is like the granddaddy existence itself kind of power that the Justice League Doom just so happened to convince to work with them. So I'm looking to see how they're going to manage to cover this in a manner of like 10 issues.
Very nice. Now, I myself actually can update what we're reading this week. We were in town. We were able to pick up a couple of books. So I grabbed the Dark Knight's Metal, the Dark Knight's Rising trade.
Oh, boy. Oh boy!
That of course has the tales of the first seven members of the Dark Multiverse Justice League, as it were.
Well, when you delve into the further details of it, it turns out they're not just the first seven; they're just the immediate ones, and probably the most strongest that are going to come into this universe and just forever evil the shit out of these people.
And, of course, they do all happen to be analogs of the different core seven members of the Justice League.
This isn't just Batman trying on everybody's suit. This is, like, real deal bullshit. It's like if a Joker had, like, 10 Batmites in him.
Now, there was a couple of details I really appreciated. When they were talking about the different dark multiverses that they came from, the negative worlds, as it were, they would use numbers that had a sense of familiarity to the fans. For instance, Red Death coming from the negative 52 universe, Drowned coming from the negative Earth 11, which of course is the gender flipped Earth. So I did find little details like that really pleasing as a fan.
The continuity connection is really good. It really takes that mirror factor and still sticks with its silhouette, which is very beneficial, less confusing, and still managing to be an entertaining read all at the same time. If Golden Age funny business like that isn't your bit, well, then delve into this, you know, better attempt at a dark superhero outlook. It's no Zack Snyder, so I guarantee you will be happy with it.
Now, I've got this habit, I'm sure most, if not all, comic reading fans do, where you have different voices that you associate with the different characters that you read, maybe from different actors or different voice presentations that you've heard through osmosis or your own childhood growing up. For example, whenever I read Batman, it's, you know, Kevin Conroy's voice. However, when I read The Batman Who Laughs, for some reason I hear Kevin Conroy doing a Mark Hamill impression.
That's exactly the kind of feel I get when I watch Batman Under the Red Hood. I know it's John DiMaggio. I know he does phenomenal, but he still has, like, it's as though Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill ran at each other too fast and molded together.
Yeah,
it's still like one of my favorites between Hamill and DiMaggio out of Best Joker. Definitely those two.
And Under the Red Hood is something we will get to, as I checked the list today. We've only got 10 more films in this universe.
Only 10.
Yeah.
Only 10. Well, that just means
not quick.
That just means, you know, we'll have to expand our universe, so to speak. You know, there's more than just DC animated features out there, and you never know what could be coming after the animated features get reviewed. We could go on to various other parts of the industry to review their animated features, their reads, what they got going on, any funny business, any sass.
Man, I would love to Easter egg hunt just on Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Now, you see, That's exactly what I'm talking about in regards to these good ideas. You know, any time could come around where, you know, you could join Clowny for an Easter egg hunt, or he'll sit down. I'll even watch the movie along with it. And, you know, I'll, you know, review over the movie parts, and Jay can point out the Easter eggs that get brought up. It could be the other way around. I could be upside down. Jay could actually be Bizarro Jay, or Bizarro Jay could be Hispanic Jay, but they could all be Jay and one Jay or three Jay. CJ?
Multiple J?
Many J. Hashtag many, many J.
The multiverse of Clowny. Little one looks terrified of that idea.
I'll give you a hint on that progression. In Earth 73, I'm a pencil sharpener.
And Little One is, of course, stirring up in the corner. She was a little taking a little nappy nap before we got to our recording, but she is starting to wake up. I see her booting up her notes that she took as well. She's got a little Shauna sass for us throughout the review, especially when it comes to Mr. Damian Wayne.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, it is very important at this time to know that there are children around the world who do not know at least 10 different forms of martial arts. Those poor, unfortunate souls will never be able to wear the black and yellow brand that waves in the night alongside the Dark Knight as Robin. And of course, a few Robin have died. A few Robin have moved on only to get beat up even worse than they did when they wore all these different colors. One Robin has decided to stick along and use his harsh training environment from previous years in his life to his advantage to help his dad fight crime. And I mean, he is currently Robin. He is the best Robin. Best. Robin. He is Damian Wayne.
And before we talk about Damian Wayne, of course, we do have to talk about this week's episode of Stargirl.
Oh, wow.
Boy, howdy. Wow. Do we have to talk about Stargirl? First and foremost, the Rex Tyler beginning was not only heartbreaking emotional to see for his son, but such a great setup towards the motivations of this character.
And do you know what else didn't seem difficult? Much like other CW shows, they didn't see any kind of problem taking a B-list villain and turning him into one of the primary sources of plot. Now, without Solomon Grundy just coming out of nowhere and just flat out body checking this vehicle, Rex Tyler wouldn't have died. He'd probably be alive and living off in some town away from Valley. And he would be alive today. But now Solomon Grundy not only has the look, he has the means, and now he has that youth, that reason for success for the Injustice Society.
And I'm loving, well, first off, it's not totally a CW show. The show was originally made for the DC app online.
No, but
then, CW loved it so much that they wanted to incorporate it into their multiverse. So to see them not change anything from that is fucking great.
Oh, of course. But my initial takeaway is just by sheer effort alone. And now that it's exactly related, I am actually aware of that. But the CW shows, just overall in presentation, we managed to get a crisis involving aliens, Nazis, multiple supervillains, and regardless of whether or not it's like Universal Studio or Hollywood quality, its own televised quality still gave us a proper image, a proper means of respect to creative control in the outlet that they provided to us. And Stargirl's doing just that, and it's just as good, if not, you know, kind of better than some of that quality already. A lot of these villains, a lot of these heroes, a lot of the actual golden age like touches that they provide for us is nothing short of spectacular.
And I'm loving the less is more approach with Grundy as well. You never see him on screen for more than a second or two at a time, not just because he's a big CGI monster and they want to hide that fact, but it adds to the horror of him. Look at Steven Spielberg and Jaws with the less is more approach to actually showing the shark. It leads more to the terror of the beast.
See, I was just actually thinking that exact same thing, only I was thinking of King Shark at the time, of course. But I find that references a lot better. King Shark is a shark. Well, of course, King Shark is a shark, but Jaws is fucking King of Sharks. He's a big fish.
So before we get into it, let's go over a quick collectibles corner as well. I was out and about in town, of course, and I did come. This is not a sponsored spot. If they wanted to sponsor us in the future, I'd fucking love that. However, I did pick up the Culture Fly Justice League loot crate box.
Oh, yeah, you have made mention of this. It's got some pretty sweet content in there. Pretty relative to everyday personal use, and, you know, some, like, really decorative, too.
Yeah, it comes with a Superman jigsaw puzzle, which is the Kryptonian S, complete shield diamond cut style. I left it in the cellophane wrapping, and I just hung that up on the wall because I love how it looks. Came with a pair of Flash socks, which even my size 13, my size 13 2E foot can still fit into them quite comfortably.
Well, you have been on a roll in getting yourself back into that trim and slim shape there. I can only imagine you've had the time to keep up with that. So, you know, why wouldn't you fit into fashion, you know?
It also came with a collectible Batman figure.
Oh,
which I've still got in the box in the bedroom, a Wonder Woman pin and a Green Lantern planter for a small plant, which I turned upside down and sat Alan Scott on top of.
Oh, and what shape is this planter taking, good sir?
It is the Green Lantern, like the power battery.
A power battery, like the ones given to each individual agent for them keep for safekeeping in a pocket dimension whenever needing to recharge.
That's correct. We do have pictures up on my Twitter. Little One's got pictures up on her Facebook and probably her Instagram as well. We're not a Marvel podcast, but I will say she picked up the Avengers box set.
That's so cool.
Yeah, she loves it. Came with Rocket and Groot pins, an Avengers blanket, a tumbler cup.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
A brass Infinity Gauntlet bottle opener, which I'm going to put some use tomorrow when we go pick up some Heineken.
It's beautiful.
That sounds absolutely fantastic.
They've got other boxes at Walmart as well. We saw Captain Marvel, all like the original three Star Wars films, Ghostbusters, Deadpool, PlayStation Spider-Man collector's box, and they're on sale for like 19 something, so $20 each.
Oh, get out of town, eh? They're like 30, they're like 30, 35 out here,
dude. Okay, if they're still on sale on Tuesday, I'll grab you like the Deadpool one or something and just store it for you.
Oh, cool.
That'd I got your neat. Back, you know that.
You know it, sweet daddy.
Your birthday's coming up. I'll see about trying to ship it out to you.
You see, my birthday's in August, but, you know, getting birthday presents right now, it means I am the goodest boy. And the goodest boy always delivers that spot-on information. I always want to make sure that everybody is informed of the most important factor in DC's younger hero universe. And I just want to remind you all that flying the black and yellow is never an easy thing, especially during times of crisis. But it certainly pays to have a dark night by your side. And that'll always happen when you are a Robin. Not just Robin, best Robin, sure, Damian Wayne. Best Robin.
See, you mentioned the Young Heroes, and it also reminds me that I finished today the hardcover Tales of the Dark Multiverse book.
You picked it up?
I picked it up and I finished it.
All right. So the main thing, like, I screamed for you when I got this book initially and I saw it, and definitely the moment was in Blackest Night, and definitely when it was showing off who Necron's newer, more powerful avatar was.
Man, this book alone had moment after moment that just appealed to me. First off, I think one of my favorite new Dark Multiverse Batman may be Saint Batman.
Oh, man. Wow. Wow. That took like a hard turn, Gotham City did. Like, he believed that he was going to do the same good that Bruce was going to do. And the only good that Bruce does now is look, well, good on the wall, mounted by a metallic spine and brain, I guess.
No, I don't want to get into too many spoilers of these stories because little one hasn't read the book yet.
I'm trying, guys.
She's trying to keep up. She's trying to keep up, and she's also she tends to the garden here at the house, and she does a lot of the cooking here as well. Anyone that goes onto her social media can see that we've got a pretty big ass garden going on. You know, tomatoes, strawberries, lettuce, cucumber, peas. I've got habanero peppers growing from my own hot sauces back there. So she's been quite busy keeping up on it all.
I see. So you have time to do all that, but no time to read comic books.
If it makes you feel any better, we've guilt tripped her into it, and she now has Dark Knight's medal in her hand.
Oh, that's fantastic, because I was going to tell Master Splinter, and he would have committed you to 10 flips.
We just watched those movies.
How can you not watch those movies? I just watched it last Sunday, you know? It was WWE Presents Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Use.
You should have seen what he was trying to make me watch this today.
Yeah, have you realized the 1997 live-action Ninja Turtles show is on Netflix?
No, Jay, because whenever I'm scrolling, I close my eyes until there's four seconds have passed by and I don't see it.
I threatened to put it on today if she didn't behave.
You monster!
Right?
I'm telling Master Splinter.
He's telling Master.
Oh my God! Speaking of Ninja Turtles, I don't know if you've seen it yet. It is in its own semblance, like Teen Titans Go, but I swear to God, you will not be disappointed by this if you watch Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They do such hilarious shit with it. It's absolutely adorable, and it's actually a great twist on it because it shows ninja proficiency and being able to use variations of your weapon as well as alternative tools of the environment, so to speak, but it still keeps that just generic, stupid, funny factor in there. They have all these different quips that are a lot like Teen Titans Go toot jokes, but it's not always toot jokes, which is what makes it all the more appealing. I will say this though, if you had watched Sonic the Hedgehog and you enjoyed the character representation of the main character, like just how he was portrayed, Ben Schwartz, the guy who does the voice for Sonic the Hedgehog, is the voice of Leonardo in this rendition of the Ninja Turtles.
You know, I have yet to actually check out the Sonic film. A little trepidation, a little bit of fear of checking it out.
Honestly, it's an interesting take. It provides you a new outlook on the primary villain's base and just how he builds to be how he is portrayed now. So all it really is just a live action face to what is already accurate, but just with a prequel sense to it.
Yeah, I have seen some clips that have made me happy. I was actually a big fan of the books and cartoon show of Sonic growing up. So when I saw in one of the trailer spots that he was actually eating chili dogs, that made me so fucking happy.
I was wondering when that part was going to come along, and they chose a great environment for it. They chose a great follow-up with it in the movie, if and when you decide to see it. It's not bad at all. There is after credit stuff as well, so if you do watch it, do stick around for that.
Very important. Yeah, when it pops up on a free service, I'll probably check it out. I'm not going to pay money to see it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I mean, I did. And you know what? It's not that I regret it. I'm just like, you know, I could have actually just sat at home and watched this. That's the kind of well I felt from it. But it was just nice to see that form of childhood hero in a sense on the big screen. Like for any kid who loves Pokemon and went to see Pokemon the first movie, that kind of feel to it. But it just underwhelmed me a little bit from there. But I was still content with what I did view.
Well, from there, we will get into our movie review. However, I'm going to take a quick bong break. So let's hear from our friends at Sunset Crypt, and then we will be right back with our review of Batman versus Robin.
Till then, sweet mama.
Do you like horror,
sci-fi,
superheroes,
comics, and adventure?
SunsetCrypt.com has you covered
with reviews and articles.
Two associated podcasts. Hot damn!
Topics on a ton of bullshit and all geekery grounds with Crypt Keepers Curtis Sturrock, Steve Brown,
and Jeff Smith.
SunsetCrypt.com. Only the reader knows what awaits them.
All right, we are back from our commercial break, and we are going to jump right into the review of Batman versus Robin.
Oh, yeah, and we happen to open that with a scene of the Batmobile speeding through a very wintry environment through a town that seems to have been forgotten about, abandoned, and overall left for dead. It's called Ichabod. From there, when the vehicle comes to a halt, though, it doesn't seem to be the Dark Knight in the Batmobile. He seems to be over the comms, scolding his son for stealing his ridiculous themed vehicle. And he happens to pop out and starts, you know, investigating around, so to speak, against his father's will, of course, which isn't setting Bruce off so much, the fact that he touched another thing Bat-related.
No, now, the few things I'd like to notice here is, one, the town itself. Of course, Ichabod brings, of course, to mind Ichabod Crane, the Headless Horseman. This is a dead town. But, of course, Crane, which is the last name of Scarecrow, who is the villain that we saw open in Throne of Atlantis for Batman.
Yes, that is true.
So a nice little through line there. And a nod if you really want to dive deep into what's going on.
It never hurts to know those things. You know, learning these fun facts is part of what makes these movies so fun, too, is that they can take so much and throw it in the allotted time slot that they have for it. So we get a nice chuckle. We get a nice surprise. We just get great reference overall, and their creativity and where to place it is a lot of fun.
And there we do see where Damien's adventure has taken him, and that is to the old Toyman factory.
Absolutely. And Damien, of course, is peering around after being told explicitly not to do anything. Like, not do anything means don't even fucking, like, blink to Batman.
But of course, not doing anything to Damien means go in, and once again, Damien is in there saving the kids.
Absolutely. To him, another way of saying it would be, good job, Damien, but I guess he expects too much.
From there, we do see that Schlott is no longer going by his father's name of Toyman, but he has taken on the role of the Dollmaker. Now, I have to personally point out and squeal a little bit. For those of you who don't know, the voice of the Dollmaker in this film was Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, baby, yeah.
I fucking love me some Weird Al. I've seen him in concert at least 3 times.
I only saw the rumor. Oh, yeah. It's true. And if there's anyone who could probably, like, go through an extensive list of just, like, the best of Weird Al, it's probably Jay. Among the Hamilton guys that I know of, he is up there in, like, the top 3 of them. But, yeah, Weird Al is a fantastic addition. I only saw rumors about it when I was talking with people about it beforehand. I couldn't find, like, the source material of where it was said that Weird Al was doing the reading for the character of the Dollmaker. So, from there, we waited until the movie came out, and after seeing it, when I had picked it up, I had seen the name under there. I'm like, Al Yankovic. I'm like, look, who only goes by Al? I'm like, oh my God, is this fucking it? So I take a picture of it, and I'm like notifying everybody about it. I'm like, dude, I was fucking right this entire time. I fucking knew it. And they're like, you were claiming something about that. A couple of them were, at least. And others were like, why the fuck are you texting me at 4 a.m? And I just had a day with it.
Now, from there, Dollmaker does unleash the corrupted kids, all with their own little versions of the mask that he's wearing. I had to pause for a second. I wish I remembered the actual fucking timestamp, but one of these masks actually looks surprisingly a lot like mine.
The one that you're wearing?
Yeah.
kind of, I see which one you're talking about. It's a pretty interesting look. Not that, you know, Buzzsaws for forearms is out, but I don't see it as a good fashion choice. So these twisted and demented physical contortions of what were previously innocent children are now chasing after Damien and trying to kill him on word of the Dollmaker, claiming it's for protection, that he's a bad man trying to attack him over trying to complete the good work that he's doing for these kids, which it seems to be somehow contorting their bodies, controlling their minds, and forcing them to be killing machines without training or anesthetic. So they are probably angry. Fuck.
So if then we do see that Damien does fight his way through those children and does start making his way towards Dollmaker in the snow.
Yeah, Batman finally manages to come in and starts helping out with, you know, sending off the last of the ravenous children, as well as making sure that the ones who weren't yet affected by the Dollmaker's corruption, pain, and torture were taken care of, assuring them that they're going to be all right, which is a really powerful message regarding where Batman comes from, how he was left alone at such a young age. But even under different circumstances, the pain and suffering is immeasurable for that, and he wouldn't want that for any innocent child to go through. So for him to stick around as he did to ensure those kids' safety was very important. And as Joe was saying, Robin did take off outside after the Dollmaker. So upon catching up with him, you know, he's really pushing his buttons with Damien, and he's really coming close. And upon his chance to actually off the Dollmaker, he just narrowly avoids killing the Dollmaker himself, reminding himself of the mantra that his father had taught to him, you know, justice, not vengeance, repeating it to him, looking away from what's making him so ravenous and angry at that moment to help him sort of calm down. And then from there, Damien here is just kind of a, you know, sucking up a meatball into a vacuum cleaner kind of sound, only to turn around and see this unknown assailant, heart in hand, dropping a Dollmaker who is trying to sneak up on Damien to kill him.
Indeed, and we do have the Talon flat out kill the Dollmaker and leaving Damien to take the heat for it.
Yeah, saying pretty much giving him that ominous message that, you know, it's you who decides once and for all what you're going to do about it, you know. It was his, you know, you only get one. Tell him. And then, yeah, just kind of bolt.
Now, from there, he does, for some reason, leave Batman a single clue, and that is an owl feather in the mouth of the Dollmaker.
For a man with such excellent precision, strategic skill, and overall combat renaissance, you would think that it would be a stupid idea to carry a feather that somebody can follow up on. Unless, of course, you're purposely looking to ambush him. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, too.
But it's just a stupid idea to... obviously, he would have had to put the feather in the mouth after killing him. Why?
No. What? Complete mystery.
I don't know what the point is, but he's got a good point.
If you can't hear little one there, she's saying he's proving a point. She has no idea what the point would be, but he's trying to prove a point.
You know, that it is actually an excellent theory to just kind of emphasize with there. Because proving that point shows that, you know, you can come after us and we're not scared. And then Bruce having the audacity to cross that line to, you know, trigger any mental instability the criminal element might have doesn't seem to work with these guys. And he got, like, busted, beaten, and crunched in half for it by a pretty authentic force of what was trying to warn him in the first place. So he definitely got lured into that, and he paid for it in full.
Now, from there, we do see a little peek into Bruce's social life as he is at the greatest date table for social distancing.
Right? Like, they are so social distancing. They're more than 6 feet, I swear. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Keep your friends close. Keep your butler closer.
So, you know, Bruce is going on for his day, trying to impress her, seeing if she'll take that bat pole by showing her his plans for the city.
Oh, man.
And at which case, I have to say, I wrote it down here in my notes, children are the biggest cock blockers there is on a date.
Okay. So I'm going to let you know what I wrote in my notes. So he ends up cock blocking by waking up in the same library as Bruce and, Samantha.
Yeah.
There we are.
Yeah. So, yeah, the exact same term in our notes.
So he woke up pretty much as soon as he heard like the door open. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going to roll over and hide, you know, completely avoid any arrival suspicion or anything. No, I'm going to stay there and snooze in, and I'm going to make him be that single mom figure. And he thinks that that's going to seem to sway to anyone away from the likes of Bruce Wayne. You don't, you know, scratch and claw to get to Bruce Wayne's dick and just stop when you see a kid in the fucking library.
But yo, it fucking works as she bails on the rest of the date, and Bruce is then left having father-son bounding time over Charles Dickens films with Damien.
Fantastic. I mean, it's not like Sam went off like to dick some other dude other than Bruce Wayne. I mean, where would you risk that?
Oh, exactly. After they go for their popcorn and movie, it's a nice night out, you know, a nice night to sneak out.
Absolutely, because nothing says child obedience like leaving after curfew, especially in like a lethal, secured, near social fortress.
And, you know, obviously this is not his first time sneaking out, as there are many traps set up for him. However, there is one that he wasn't ready for, and the security system does stop Damien from trying to sneak out yet again.
Absolutely. Getting caught must have been a rather tight embarrassment for Damien.
From there, you know, Batman says, I'm going out for the night, and I got you a babysitter.
Big brother!
And that is, of course, Big Brother Dick Grayson. Nightwing will be watching over Damien for the night.
They'll say duel.
Yikes.
Now, this actually has a great fight scene between Damien and Dick as they go back and forth. There's an excellent reflection shot that shows Dick Grayson just reflected in the original Robin costume.
I seem to recall him saying something that was absolutely fake news. Mm-hmm. Was it something about being the only Robin?
No. See, that goes back to the theory that I've had on this show before, that in this universe, there has been no Jason Todd and no Tim Drake. So, because we've never seen those characters, we're never introduced to them or alluded to them, I believe that so far he has been the only Robin.
But didn't they have somewhere that one of those other Robins, like the one that died, Jason, I guess it was, didn't they have
That was in Under the Red Hood. Though, part of the animated universe in DC, it's not part of the current current continuity that we'd be going through now, which is unfortunate. I would love to see just kind of a Jason Todd input on going up against Damien, or at least trying to. I mean, if you think that the original Robin got his like ass and face handed to him on one plate, I don't think the angry stepchild Robin is going to do any better.
So yeah, that line alone pretty much confirms my suspicions that Dick Grayson has been the only Robin in this universe.
Oh, yeah. One guy got beaten to death and blown up for Batman, and the other guy tried to psychotically chase a resurrection method for his dead Kryptonian clone. I wonder why they only wanted two Robins.
Mm-hmm. But from then, we are introduced for the first time to the Hall of Owls. You know, it says that in the Gotham Museum, I love the touch of the dinosaur bones and the layout and patterns on the museum floor. It's the exact same tiling that they use in Arkham City.
If you didn't like the fight and quips that come from Dick and Damien through their little squabble at the beginning there, just getting those initial frustrations out, then you would at least would love just the overall visit to a center of education to search around for clues about history regarding the exact city that it sits in, for example. You know, local history is always some of the most unique ways to really delve into the past and really pick up that interest to start learning about it. So touching base with that, finding themselves in this section beautifully dedicated to just avian life. And you just kind of notice there's a couple feathers missing. And from that point, for some reason, it got him to flash back to a moment with his parents as they started reciting an old poem from the town fable regarding the Court of Owls. And I gather that you also noticed this, Jay, that Thomas Wayne at this time has in fact been voiced by Kevin Conroy.
That's not the only thing I noticed. I did love that touch to it, which harkened back to the Flashpoint universe and Kevin Conroy being Thomas Wayne there. The other thing I noticed is when he read the poem, it's not the exact same poem verbatim as it is from the comics.
No, I gather they had taken changes, but that was one of the more shocking changes that they had made. I'm like, what are they changing so much for?
Yeah, I believe even on the live action Gotham show, they kept the original poem. So I'm not sure why they would have switched it up for this feature alone.
You know, that's something I wouldn't mind rewatching again. I might go back and watch Gotham.
I've been thinking about that recently as well. Maybe after the 10 weeks are up or, you know, something in between Supergirl, we'll start a Gotham rewatch and we'll talk about that at some time as well.
Yeah. Hey, you know, again, you know, those progressive ideas for what's yet to come, you know, how far into the universe our knowledges and reviews and whatnot will take place in. So I can only imagine what kind of fun lies ahead.
So from there, Bruce is trying to put things together in his mind. He's hearing about the court, young Bruce is at least. He hears about the young Court of Owl, the Court of Owls at a young age, and starts putting things together as Joe Chill's murder of his parents is shown once again. And for the first time in any continuity, really, we're seeing that at the end of that murder, he now saw an owl carrying away a dead bat.
Not to mention that we're seeing an 8-year-old boy read books at a 4th to 10th grade level. Holy crap.
His dad's such a liar, too. Well, there is no Court of Owls, Bruce. It's all a dream.
Oh, yeah. Thomas Wayne definitely knew, as the Court of Owls had caused him to be in a car accident years before, costing him and Martha the birth of their first son.
Now, if any of you happen to have read over the comic book art starting the partnership between Snyder and Capullo in the Court of Owls, the story told regarding the actual history, like the in-depth detail, those smaller notes regarding the Waynes, Joe Chill, just Bruce's upbringing overall have been monumentally dark. I mean, like when they reintroduced the Batman of Zur-En-Arr kind of level dark, that was just absolute madness. Was insane and just a compelling read. So for them to be able to encapture a lot of those details and at least do great callbacks to those, that's another positive outlook on the creative twist that they take.
Now we do stay with young Bruce as he starts to investigate things and even goes up to the attic. And my notes here says, you know, killing animals as a small child is the sure signs of a serial killer. As Bruce Wayne plucks an arrow through an owl's heart.
Perhaps the court was looking to exact vengeance on Bruce because they saw him do this and they threw their fist in the sky and they screamed out, "Owl, get you for this."
Wow, lame. Love it.
Yo, what up? Fancy one-liner, Mize 2020, what up?
you know, from there we are snapped back to reality as the court has sent their assassins to take on Bruce. And my note here is I fucking love the depiction of the Court of Owls and their fighting styles.
Absolutely. Even their contortion after being like just mangled and mutilated is absolutely hilarious. So as he snapped back to reality, oops, went gravity, and Bruce got just his ass kicked by these three really obscure moving apparatuses. He doesn't know what to make of them, and he doesn't really start making lethal blows only if he's like really desperate to, and it's just entertaining and there's so much suspense because you don't know how well he'll actually come back from this.
Even when he does start going for those fatal blows, he snaps one's neck on backwards and the dude keeps coming after him.
You know, that which was really annoying for Herman, because he had this like hanging booger thing going on and Batman turned his head upside down. So he just went back in there. It is sitting in the crevice and he's just kind of like doing a ball in the cup thing with it. And it was absolutely terrible for Herman.
No, what else was terrible for Herman was moments later, they had all just kind of stopped and disintegrated into puddles of goo.
Except for the one guy, he just went beep, 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 and that was it. But as for the other two, yeah, they were about ready to deliver a killing blow, and then suddenly they just stopped, they seized up, and just kind of poof.
And they did leave Batman in a bloody mess, in a heap of that which even the war against Darkseid's forces in Justice League War didn't leave him this beaten up as these three assassins did. And he actually had to hit the emergency switch. Now we cut over to poor Dick Grayson, who's trying to set up a little action with Corey for later on in the night. She's talking about how she's wearing a thong right now.
The overall lingerie mention and the imagination of any DC fan has always had that like a great sense of wonder as what Princess Coriander would actually look like naked. And Dick being able to talk to her through it and imagine it, it's madness. The poor guy, he had to schedule it for another evening because he was babysitting for Bruce Wayne.
Now, of course, he does go to check on Damian, who, of course, is gone. And he is saving a young couple, or not a young couple, an older couple, mm-hmm. in an alleyway, just beating the ever-living shit out of a couple of thugs.
Absolutely. Like, these guys certainly put their hands places on a lady that, you know, they shouldn't have put their hands on to begin with. And that was by approaching them aggressively and doing what they do. They of course, didn't know what hell kind of awaited them shortly after when Damian arrived. So, yeah, he fucked them up, son.
That is, of course, when Talon keeps the recruiting methods on young Robin, brings him back to his nest, as it were. And that's when I noted that Talon is very Azrael in his motivations, his patterns, even some of the Hall of Armors that he has around. Just kind of came off of that Order of Saint Dumas vibe.
It did, you know, having that ancestral touch, so it were, going into something that's, you know, past and bloodline related, and being cut from the same cloth, just different color. I do enjoy the unique aspects of how Talon progressed into the role that he's in. Maybe those suits would resemble suits from, you know, past family members of his that they may be included. Maybe that's why he was also considered. So by going through these suits, it's different generations of assassins who was secretly behind historical prospects of death in general, any allies, enemies to fight with, and how they controlled the initial prospect for Gotham at its beginning.
Indeed, and from there, he does give Robin a sigh and a home area. A signal device as a show of good faith.
Yeah, just like, hey, you know, it's a pager. Let me know where you're at and we're good.
And from there, Damien does return home to find Alfred bandaging up Bruce and to a lashing of where the fuck you been?
Absolutely. It's not the fact that he went out. It's not the fact that he snuck out. It's that he went and did Batman things without Batman. So yet again, Bruce displaying his context as a father by, you know, putting initiative on a bat stuff over dad stuff.
And from there, Bruce does find the sigh on him, asks him where he got it.
Yeah, he was very shocked and, you know, just obscurely curious as to where in fact this had come from.
He does lock it into a little safe as well, just outside the doorway.
With a passcode that Damien already knows, apparently.
Now, did you catch the passcode or understand its significance?
It was 1369, wasn't it?
939.
Oh, 1939. Oh, yeah. Isn't that the same one used in the Justice League cartoon to free Bruce out of the Justice League prison thing? Also, is
not only that, sir. Not only that, in May of 1939 was the first issue of Detective Comics.
Oh.
Batman debuted in 1939.
So Batman was around in 1939, but instead they chose Captain America to go punch him.
God, that's right.
We could have. The American hero could have been Batman.
We do find out, though, after Batman's little code, that Alfred is the one that set Damien free. He opened the cage and let the bird fly.
See, this is why we don't let Alfred have gummy bears before dinner. He does just outrageous things, and you know what? He completely lashes out. That young man is, you know, going to become a solid American grade A farming dude, and he needs to learn the ways of the man. You know, he can't just go pulling silly pranks.
You know, sometimes you have to cut Alfred a little snack on those meals. Anyone that's played Arkham Origins knows all he wanted to do was sit there and have
Christmas dinner with Bruce. All he wanted. Bruce had to be a dick. Bruce had to be a dick.
As you can see, she is still upset about that.
Well, you could either punch a giant crocodile in the face or eat mashed potatoes. And I did, sir, always enjoy mashed potatoes because I did, sir, would not stand a fucking chance against an 8-foot superhuman crocodile man.
On that note, we're at the 27-minute mark, sir. What do you say we take a quick break?
Sounds good. You know, we'll take that breather. We'll hop right back into it and see how things settle with Damien, where he's going, what he's doing.
And what happens next when he contacts the Talon. And we are back, and Damien has hit on his little beacon to contact the Talon.
He's making his way, of course, and Talon receives it with, you know, as though he were expecting to hear from Damien.
Which, of course, he was. And simultaneously, we see Bruce on his way to a date with Samantha when his car is being boxed in.
Absolutely. He was just having a conversation with Samantha. You know, he's on his way there. He's actually, like, pressing to make it there. But the Court of Owls is like, oh, no, B, we got family vehicles. You're going nowhere. So, yeah, they boxed him in, and they start, you know, hammering at him and guiding him away so that way they could get him in a procurable spot to take him. And Bruce, of course, is speeding and trying to fight it off so that way he'd be able to escape them or find out what's going on before he can meet up with Samantha.
Which, of course, he never does get the chance to because the court is able to cause a accident for Bruce, allowing them to throw a hood over him and bring him in.
So the one thing he was able to at least do is see the what would be like face of people who would be taking him away as they had arrived, of course, in those white masks that we all know and love from the Court of Owls.
From there, you know, Bruce does start hearing a speech from the Grand Master, who we will hear a lot about throughout this. She does mention that the court helped drive off another force ages ago. Now, you mix that in with the regeneration technology that they are trying to reproduce, and I've theorized that the Court of Owls once took on the League of Assassins for Gotham.
It is a possibility, which is why Russell Gould in the past has made a mention to being familiarized with Gotham City. So that could tell untold tales of, you know, a series that would be just phenomenal to read or watch happen, or, you know, just watch go down to see who has the better skill, who has the better numbers, from League of Assassins to Court of Owls. Because that seems like a hell of a rivalry. But of course, the League of Assassins, anyone would expect, would come out on top of that one, which is why they were driven away.
It would also make Damian's recruiting into the court even more of an interesting story arc, having the son of the League of Assassins joining the Court of Owls is very Capulet and Montague.
Yeah, it's outstanding, it's the amount of calculation that goes on.
It is a story waiting to be written.
No, absolutely. I mean, they managed to go as far as in the comics making mention to how Dick Grayson is actually an almost necessity requirement for them at that time, until Batman busts them in the jaw for, you know, what would seem to be a little reason, but it turns out there was symbolism to the Court of Owls and the tracking bit in his tooth from them. So for them to go as far back as to Dick Grayson's birth and tagging him, holy shit.
Yeah, of course, it is explained that back in the day, there were the War of the Two Factions for Gotham, those in the black and those of the white, not racial, of course, just the factions. And Dick Grayson was the one that was born in between this good and evil. And that is where his namesake came from, because he was not of the dark or of the light. He was the gray sun in the middle of it all.
It was an excellent play on his last name, as well as just a great overall character development point in a brand new like character introduction arc. So again, it just it builds more plot for us. Gives us more to look forward to in the future. And the Court of Owls did have their day in regards to inclusion in the DC universe, whether cinematic or again in the comics. They've done nothing but provide a marvelous presence.
Yeah, there was a story arc in the comics where Dick actually does either masquerade or become a Talon. I haven't read the arc myself. I'm going to have to check in with some Nightwing experts on that one.
I know a few people.
As do I. Ashley's always been a great Nightwing go-to.
Yeah, apparently Robin of any nature is like a fangirl pandemonium.
It's them shorty shorts.
God damn. Why shorty shorts? You took them out in minus 10, Bruce. Why fucking shorty shorts?
From there, we do see Damian teaming up with Talon as they go take on a extension of the Draco crime family.
Absolutely. And one of the primary heads of them, or at the very least a higher like enforcer, started to choke, and if they would have waited maybe like 30 seconds after the staring faces did nothing, then, you know, he would have died on his own. But he decided to cut him a little slack, all for creative introduction, because tonight's entertainment had arrived.
Now, of course, Batman's code of justice, not vengeance, does echo once again in Damian's mind as he fails to murder.
That is true. He does take upon that. And another thing that makes him such a phenomenal Robin is that when push comes to shove, he really knows how to put the focus towards that mantra. And it really helps in the crime fighting status, which is the overall goal. So he doesn't become an apocalyptic evil that he's been fabled as. So going forth with that, he still manages to fuck people up like he normally does. But he comes to the point of narrowly avoiding killing, and to me that still not killing, which is following under the justice, not vengeance thing all the better.
And from there, Talon does have a talk with Robin up on the rooftop about how Batman's still in his ear.
Yeah, he's his mentor. He's, you know, he's the sidekick to Batman. So, of course, he's going to need to follow his methodology. And that, of course, is no killing. You have to be better than them. Justice is the true fashion of fairness. And, well, Bruce is instilling justice he never got for people who would never get it on their own. And that's what he wanted to impute to Damian. So, yeah, Batman's going to be in his ear. As opposed to Talon, who's a pretty overwhelming presence to Damian, and he's really trying to push the whole Jason Todd kind of method of thinking into, like, it doesn't fucking matter if they live or die. They just have to be stopped. So I'm just going to go with what's easiest and not bother restraining, just completely erase him from the equation. And that's how he sees it, is that the only way it is to just erase the problem rather than trying to fix it.
And from there, we do start to see the ultimate rebellion of Damian as we get the titular fight scene of Batman versus Robin.
Oh, yeah. Dad found out that the boy snuck out after curfew, and the bad influence kid is like, oh, shit, it's your dad. I'm a dip. And leaving Damian to get in trouble for it, in which case Bruce is opting to go after him, not wanting Damian to come along for obvious reasons. And Damian does... light the fire at that point by cutting down Batman's line with one of the batarangs, and from there he pushes Damian's buttons into bringing him on, and we are led into what we've been waiting for, the one-on-one phenomenal bout between father and son, Batman and Robin. They start getting into it, and it gets like Matrix physical there.
Yeah, they're smashing through windows, just not laying into each other. The entire thing ends when Batman, you know, sacrifices his own back, really, against a concrete angel taking the blow and saving his son.
Well, you don't have to fly all the way here from Santa Prisca, you know? The structural integrity does it for you.
But from there, we see that's not the only insult to injury that the Talon has instilled. He hasn't just taken Batman's kid. The dude's fucking his girl, too.
What? The courtmaster, Sam, is boning another guy behind Bruce's back? I have the Kevin McAllister Home Alone face thing going on there, and I just realized now nobody can actually see me.
But, you know, from finding out that they're just getting their freaky deaky on, is then revealed that she is the headmaster of the Court of Owls.
Bum, bum, bum. Apparently the Vannevars have been just marvelous influences on the city of Gotham over, like, the last century or however long that it's been there for. And, an influence they've been by means of Court of Owls and being part of the, you know, larger seating, so to speak, the bigger throne, the King's Scepter, the Big Mac in the meal.
We do see Batman then going through some sewers, ones that have been closed for many generations. Alfred cracks a little joke of back in the sewers, which is, you know, a nice little nod to Justice League War.
Absolutely. And it'll even give you some semblance of reminder for him hunting down other characters who just can't seem to lock themselves, like, hoard themselves in warehouses where it's not filled with shit-infested water. You know,
he then does discover a wall, which brings him into what was one of my favorite parts of the comic, the labyrinth.
Oh man, if you thought this was a suspenseful hardship for Batman in this movie, going back into the comic, the initial story arc involving the Court of Owls, Batman gets into this maze looking around for them, but he's trapped there for God knows how long, and he continuously has to hydrate himself because he's there for, well, we don't know how long. And it was from there in the comic he found out that every time he went to hydrate, that's how he was being drugged. And they pretty much sat back and were like trying to hold back, snickering at him, saying there's a door right behind you kind of deal. And he just went absolutely mad. Like, I don't, at the time this was brand new, this was just monumentally berserk, and I didn't know how to take it as a Batman fan, because they somehow managed to break his psyche at that point, and it was so eerie.
Not only that, as a comic reader, if you actually pick up the actual physical book, it becomes a mind fuck for you, because you've got to turn the book like upside down at one point and like tell yourself to flip the pages like it's a manga. It, you know, it's a real mind fuck just on how you're reading the book physically.
Thank you, Scott Snyder, for helping me realize that you shouldn't smoke weed and try to read comics at the same time. But it was it was a tremendous creative like path that they took. I really enjoyed what they did in regards to that, finally getting a chance to, you know, in a sober state, of course, just reading over the contents and adventures that they presented to us. It was a lot of fun. Like, kudos for that.
We even get a little tease of what we could call the only tease of a dark multiverse we would see in this, as we see the court's future depiction of a Damian Batman.
Oh, good sir. That wasn't a dark multiverse thing. That was like in the comics. That was an actual like prediction of the future. Like, Damian would become Batman, but Gotham, like the world, would burn at his feet.
Like, Damian, oh yeah, however,
rule the world.
That world will never come to be, as we will find out in Justice League Apocalypse War. That world has been averted. So somewhere in the multiverse, that world still exists.
Oh, well, outstanding. Hey, great job, whoever is in charge of making and destroying universes is. Barbados or Barbados or... You know, we'll blame Greg from accounting. Fuck you, Greg. I hope a parademon takes you, you bitch.
Man, I swear, Greg shorted me 50 cents on my change last week.
Fuck's sakes, Greg! Did you get attacked by parademons? What are you thinking? You just short him 2 quarters. I'm coming for you, Greg. I'm fucking coming for you. I'm gonna take your cat by the tail. I'm gonna lift that tail up. I'm gonna fucking scream in its asshole. I'm gonna open its rectum. I'm just gonna fucking like hair metal scream in its ass.
And if by some chance one of our listeners' name is actually Greg, how you doing?
Please don't take it seriously. I will not come. I'm afraid it will kill me. I know what cats are capable of. They're monsters.
And I was, on a side note, I was checking out our analytics, and shout out to whoever's listening to us from Germany.
Hey, yeah, it's always great, you know, having new people join us, especially new people that aren't from around here. And since we can't really have visitors, it's the next best thing. So thanks for tuning in, guys. And, you know, even the, all the same to everybody else, we don't want to leave them out. Thanks for tuning in. We enjoy listening to us, you know, go over cartoons like adults do, and just watch myself in particular make an absolute ass out of myself, because I swear one of these days some guy named Greg's going to come up to me. He's like, you're going to screw my cat's ass, right? And I'm going to get fucking pile driver on the sidewalk. Pile driver. But don't know.
Well, we don't want that, but we also don't want to be Bruce when he does finally wake up from this psychotic dream and they've got him in a straitjacket.
Yeah, whether it's something that he did, how he was flailing about, he must have gone through some sort of craze like somebody would after coming out of a Lazarus pit, or if they, pardon me, wanted to just overall like try and keep him there for the sake of going back out again, because that seems to be the only way you can stop Bruce Wayne there is by restraining him by doing so. It seems to have been the only method to stop him by doing anything. Pardon me, sir. My hair is long and got in my mouth. I should tie it back more often. Pardon me.
Hey, Hamilton is entering stage 2 as of today, I believe it was. So you'll be able to book yourself a haircut appointment if you wanted one.
Are you kidding me? You look miraculous like this. If I cut my hair, I'll look like a Canadian Tommy Dreamer. And I gotta tell you, man, that's awful. Sorry, Tommy.
Or the right thing to do.
Oh man, I am surprised that I haven't put that shit on a t-shirt yet.
You could. I'll give you the information on the What a Maneuver shop that I'm looking into for myself.
Oh, that's fantastic. That'll be good.
But we do see that now Damian Wayne is at the ritual for the Court of Owls.
He is. Talon is making his argument's sake that Damian has in fact chosen to just kind of forsake the bat and join to the side of the court. And of course, there's some reluctance in Damien's presentation of his true identity. Still some of that Bruce in his head, you know, really talking things over with his mind, and he's troubled by it. But Talon does pressure him into removing the mask.
And you do realize then that Talon does see a lot of himself in Damian Wayne, as Damian does end up removing his mask for the court.
Absolutely. And much like looking at Damian as a part of himself, there is a flashback in the movie in regards to Talon's troubled past regarding he and his father committing burglaries together, and if he dropped a loot or if he failed at something or caused an alarm to go off, his dad would get drunk and kick the shit out of him. So one day he had enough, ratted him out to the cops, and he got gunned down because he felt he wasn't going to jail. And from there, you know, we're back with Talon, we're back with Damian, they're doing their thing. But the courtmaster behind the mask is a little bit of shock because she recognizes the face that came from under the mask in Damian Wayne. And so, like any person with an IQ of 4 or higher would, they would put together that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
And that, of course, is not good for Batman, as the court does launch a full-scale attack on Wayne Manor.
Absolutely. Of course, not before all of the current, like, you know, higher society types of the Court of Owls being clawed and stabbed down by Talon, who does not like the premise of having to kill Damian only because he's related to Batman. They are 95% of the way there, and all it takes is that extra little shimmy through the door, and they got him. But they want to kill him for some reason, and that just sets Talon off. It sends him back, it hits too close to home, and he slaughters them all, but not before telling the courtmaster to run because he wants to kill her last. And he makes that example by going to her, trying to show try to ease her anxiety and everything, calm her down before shunk in goes the hand, bringing her down. She's out. And so he traps Damien inside one of the regeneration pods so he won't try to stop Talon, as he noticed that reluctance in him before. Talon decides to make way with like an absolute truckload of Talons. Is like, yo, Wayne Manor's throwing a party. Let's go crash the shit out of that. Steal their kegs, tip over their flower vases, and yeah, it's all out war on Wayne Manor from that point.
It is, and you realize just how outmanned and outgunned Wayne Manor is, as it's only Batman, Nightwing, and Alfred calling shots from the control center.
He not only called shots from the control center; he called shots from the control trigger as well, as. A lot of the fight that ensued and eventually progressions being made, even Alfred joined the fray. But starting from the fight there, it kicked off pretty heavily. You know, it was a pretty deep fight between the Talons and Bruce and his first ward. So it was really nice seeing that old school Batman and Robin connection, like that beginning dynamic duo base and progressing on into a modern touch of like knuckles to mouth syndrome, you know? And it really comes back to haunt the Talons, because those two together seem like a near unstoppable duo. They go forth and fight through, and Bruce sends Dick away after a short while after the fight, though I guess they managed to trim down the numbers enough. But Talon happens to join the fray, you know, giving himself a formal introduction without his Court of Owls face on, signifying his means and mission to go solo with, you know, the core army, you know, dead body zombie people behind his back. And from there, things really kick into high gears. They start getting into it, like just cutting through Wayne Manor.
Indeed. Now, Bruce did send Dick through the grandfather clock entrance, which I love that touch. Not only is it a callback to things like the 89 Batman, but like the Michael Keaton stuff, as well as the Flashpoint films with that grandfather clock. But also later on, we see it's not the only entrance, which is a nice touch.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the fact that they decided to include more of the blueprint and more of the foundation of Wayne Manor rather than just the initial, like, all right, well, this is where, this is the inside, you know, stuff part where you put your shoes. That's where I slide down a pole to my cave where I wear bat pajamas. And that'd be the end of that. So showing these different routes as to how to and where to and what to is really cool. It's really colorful at that.
Now, we do see Alfred starting to charge a giant weapon, but in the meantime, Damien does escape and manages to get a call in, letting Alfred know that the Talons cannot live at zero temperature.
Because the animation process, as we've seen in the canister that he escaped from, keeping them preserved so they could perform under such functions, the temperature was astronomical. I'm surprised that Damien wasn't scalding or burning up in there. So it was good that he got out as quick as he did, and revealing the secret to the Talons, and plus them being allergic to such cold temperatures is quite the shock for them, probably freeze them quite instantly. So Alfred is trying to relay this info to Bruce, and he doesn't manage to get through to him right away, but he's going to be fighting through like a whole lot of them, and in fashion at that, as once Batman escapes, he manages to get into one of the same sections that Alfred was in to begin with, working on this little suit there, hitting the buttons and everything like that, connecting the cables. And then once they crash through, the door opens up and Bruce, with open arms and a doormat that says, fuck off, says, get the hell out of my cave. In the books, he says, get the hell out of my house, which would have been way cooler. But, you know, it still sends that same message, especially when you're wearing this giant, maybe stronger than titanium version of your own fist.
Yeah, the Iron Bat, as I wrote it down as, definitely had some good striking power behind it, as it was taking out 3 to 4 Talons at a time per strike.
Hashtag Hammers of Justice, baby.
From there, we do see a little something-something that Talon has been hiding, and that is a shout-out to Assassin's Creed with that hidden blade.
Oh, yeah, just straight up flick of the wrist, and, you know, he's casually in Bruce's ribs. That was, an immense fight that they had, though, because Bruce coming out of this, and he's like, man, my house, my fucking kid, but more importantly, you know I'm Batman. Oh, yeah, and my kid. So Bruce gives him, like, a sugar daddy spanking for sure. Like, those millions of dollars knuckles just laid waste to Talon for a good portion of that fight. Because Bruce, he's not just angry when he's mad. He's, like, angry, determined, and that just bolsters his fighting capability. And for a man who can put down, like, metahumans with more than 100 pounds of, like, force in his, like, his grips, his holds, and his strikes, how he manages to get all that done, like, you don't want to fuck with that kind of guy. But Talon thought it was a good idea, and so he got pummeled out pretty hard up until the point where, as Jay mentioned, he pulled that good old Edward Kenway right to the gut.
Now, we do hope that fans spent a lot of this movie getting attached to Talon, learning his story, and, you know, hoping that we see a great comic book adaptation of him in the future, because, as you know, Talon did get his own solo run as someone looking to become a hero in the future. But all those hopes are for naught as Talon kills himself.
Yeah, and then Damien finally manages to arrive, and after trying his last-ditch effort to convince Damien to, you know, join him in his cause, He's all like, dude, no, he's my fucking father. You're not getting out of this. You're not succeeding by any means. And he comes to nearly killing Talon, and Talon's like, no, this is stupid. Fuck this. He knew he wasn't going to win, but he didn't want them to go forward with their, you know, usual message, their influence of justice. He felt that his form of justice, regardless what side of the coin, was a more noble way to go. When you could have rehabilitated, been like an anti-hero at Gotham, which could have actually sprung out like a different, you know, series of comics in regards to a rebirth version of Talon going up against, or even joining with the Court of Owls at that, joining with the Bat family, whatever the case is, still being a constant enemy, a threat. Remember the Legion of Doom, you could have done so much, but you gave off the idea that, you know, his comic series, his solo run was, you know, dead, you know, one novel in, and then all of a sudden you still go forward with the rest of the Court of Owls. You still have this guy kill himself off in the movie instead of like getting away and then joining up at a future point in Batman continuity, like with the League, like with the League of Shadows, as they call it, and just having that like initial name inside like an assassin stereotype. But it was his decision to make. He decided that was more noble anyway, and he went forth with, yeah, jamming a side blade through his throat, putting him down, and he. Damian turned to Batman, who had seen everything, of course, knew what went down, but I guess Damian just kind of expressed a look of, like, guilt, like, oh, shit, he's gonna blame me for this. Like, all I did was stand there. He fell forward into the shit. But Bruce, of course, he understands what's going on. He doesn't take shit from Talon's influence on the recent action of him deciding to kill himself just because Damian was holding his side, and he's like, dude, whatever. He proceeds to, you know, be all fatherly like from there, you know, asking how he's doing and everything like that. I mean, like, if he had been that, you know, emotionally tied to Damian, say, at the beginning of this movie or at the end of the last one, then, but he probably wouldn't have led to this point, and you guys wouldn't have gotten beaten up by an army of zombie people.
Now, earlier in the film, Bruce did threaten Damian to send him to boarding school. This was back when he was locking up the Psi. However, now Bruce is telling him about a monastery in the Himalayas that truly helped him, because Damien is saying that he needs time to go out into the world and find himself.
Absolutely. And Batman recommended a pretty damn good place to go to in the Himalayas. And it would have also actually been a pretty good introduction to Deadman at that point. Although we may see him later on, and he may have a more important role to play than we think.
Exactly. And that is how this movie ends, with Damian in the Himalayas. There is no post-credit scene for this one. So no. Overall thoughts, sir?
I thought that it was very Damian-like to be like, yeah, no, I'm gonna go start packing stuff so I can leave. And he just fucking ditches Batman, Nightwing, and Alfred to be cleanup crew of Wayne Manor, which is pretty much exploded, gotten destroyed and beat up, all because of Damian's inability to choose what side he's on at that point in time. So Damian could have at least stuck around and gave him a hand for that. I'd be like, sorry, I, you know, inspired an army of like underground undead ninjas to try and kill us. But aside from that, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie, not only as a mashup of referral points being put together in a solid and entertaining Frankenstein of a film. It was just overall well-appointed with like voice acting. They got some pretty great people. And I think I made the mistake last time as referring to Batman being voiced by Jason Isaacs. I apologize. I got the wrong Jason wrong. It was Jason O'Mara that has started voicing the Batman for this continuity of animated features, and thus goes on to continue to do so up until Apocalypse War. But overall, not a bad Batman movie at all. It's one, of course, I would watch again if, you know, I just felt like watching Batman stuff. It's not like at the top five of them, but it's still good.
Perfect. Little one, do you have any thoughts coming out of Batman versus Robin?
No.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
It was all right.
Nice, simple, and to the point, it was all right. Now, we mentioned it would have been nice to see Talon coming back in future Batman films, perhaps in team-up films. You know, maybe like our next film, because next week on the Creature Feature podcast, we will be reviewing Batman Bad Blood.
Jumping right back into another arc involving the Bat family is a great way to go. You know, you don't always have to go Batman something else, because it's far too predictable. So you may as well get another shot at the Bat family out of the way. Other inclusions to their past and other reminders of characters that still have a strong standpoint to go up against the Bat family with. And in this one, we also get introduced to Lucius's son, as well as a larger involvement from such obscure characters like, again, Lucius, Jervis Tetch. And of course, we even get an interesting villain take when we come into just a gargantuan man that is a lot closer to the Bat family than you would think he would be.
Not to mention, we are getting the introduction of Batwoman on this film as well.
That is true, yep. And she has a great role to play in it, especially her and her father. They both got introduced rather swiftly and creatively from what I've seen. And pairing her up with the question in the comics has made things even more intriguing. Going into a crisis investigation, just overall Gotham-based adventures, and even them two coming to, you know, the discovery of who Chris Allen actually was the whole time before he had lost the power of the Spectre.
Perfect. Well, I'm sure we will talk a lot about Batwoman and her rise next week on the Creature Feature podcast. Until then, Mize, where can the people find you?
And just like any day, every day, you know, you happen to be looking out something to talk about superhero shit or whatever the case may be. You can always find me on Twitter at Mize1987. I always have a wackadoodle name change every once in a while. I like going through pictures, the colorful stuff. Speaking of pictures, you can find me on Instagram at OneManMize. Aside from that, I do various trading card game videos, primarily Yu-Gi-Oh, on my YouTube channel, Mize Day for a Duel. Because Mize sounds like nice, and it makes things a lot easier. I thought it was funny. Nobody else thinks it's funny. Everyone tells me to shut up. Everyone tells me, sir, you can't be in the library past closing hours. I don't know the hell that is. But aside from that, enough about me. Where can everyone find you?
Of course, everyone can find me on Twitter at ClowningJ. You can also hear me on the Courage Pro Wrestling podcast, anchor.fm/CP Wrestling, where I interview independent wrestlers from Courage Pro Wrestling. We find out their life story and what makes them tick, as well as what they're doing during this quarantine time. Also, little one, where can the people find you?
6Space Hair on Twitter and on Instagram. I think I'm Sick Little One.
Perfect. Well, folks, that's where you can find all of us. Stay in touch. Shoot us a message. Let us know what's up. Tell us how much you love the podcast. Tell us what you want to hear from the podcast, what we can improve on. But until then, my friends, I say to you, we will see you next week on the same pod time.
On the same pod channel.